You're listening to How To 20-Something, the only podcast that helps both men and women navigate their 20s and learn how to adult across all aspects of their lives. We're going to be focusing on career, relationships, finances, fitness, nutrition, and all of the common challenges and obstacles a typical 20-something will face in this post-college life and what to do about it. I'm your host, Jess Diamond, and I am the CEO and founder of Jess Diamond Coaching, where I help young professionals get their shit together, gain their confidence, and own their life. No one prepares you for this adulting world, so allow me to help you feel like you are no longer a chicken running around with its head cut off, and that you actually know what the hell is going on and what your next step to take is. Welcome to How To 20-Something. Welcome back to another episode of How To 20-Something. Today is actually the last nutrition-related episode for a little bit, so if you have any episode ideas you want me to shed light on, then please head to the show notes and fill out the form that will let you submit a topic or a question. But today's episode is all about chronic illness, and I am so happy to bring on another one of my coaching colleagues to discuss the matters. I would say over the last decade or so, more and more people have been diagnosed with some type of chronic illness. More specifically, I've personally seen it be Hashimoto's or hypothyroidism, PCOS, Crohn's, and diabetes. So I decided it would be beneficial for you guys to hear from an expert who helps people minimize their chronic illness symptoms through healthy and natural processes. And we want to help you not only avoid future diagnoses for those of you who are fortunate enough to be illness-free, but also alleviate your suffering if you do have a chronic illness. So we're going to be discussing the role inflammation plays in chronic illness in relation to the food you eat and your lifestyle choices, what ingredients to keep an eye out for, some fun facts mixed within all that, and steps you can take to naturally heal your body and take care of yourself. But first, I would like to introduce who you'll be listening to today. Cindy Sickle is a flexible nutrition and lifestyle transformation coach with a passion for empowering individuals to take control of their health. Her journey into holistic wellness began with her own battles against gestational diabetes and Hashimoto's hypothyroidism, alongside her husband's challenge with type 2 diabetes. With over 25 years of experience in the field, Cindy brings an empathetic approach to her work, walking alongside her clients on their wellness journey. She firmly believes that everyone deserves access to safe and healthy food, and she's made it her mission to make this a reality for others. As a flexible nutrition and lifestyle transformation coach, Cindy provides support, education, and motivation to help her clients understand their bodies better and make informed choices that lead to a thriving life. Her goal is to empower individuals to take control of their health and experience the transformative power of holistic wellness. Hi, Cindy. Welcome to How To 20-Something.
Hey, Jess. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I'm so glad you're here. I want to start with just asking you, what is chronic illness and why do you think it's on the rise in recent years?
Okay, so chronic illness, by definition, is a long-term health condition that may or may not have a cure. And that can include like diabetes, mood disorders, heart disease. There's a lot of illnesses that are out there that people don't realize could be chronic. And nutrition plays a big part of it. And over the last 40 years with increased processed foods, and it started with like TV dinners, and then it went to like now everything is pretty much processed in our grocery stores. That has led to a lot of chronic illnesses because they use fillers and chemicals. And even if you're eating them when you're younger, they just kind of lay dormant in you. And then all of a sudden they come out as a chronic illness like 20 years later. And you're like, what? I didn't know I was going to be sick. So that's a big part of it. Stress too, like our lifestyle these days, everyone's stress level is basically heightened in the fast-paced world we live in. So between stress and the inflammation that is in our body that keeps our bodies from healing, it just leads to chronic illness.
That's scary to think about. And I want to start with your story, because your story begins with gestational diabetes, which for those of you listening who don't know what that is, it is diabetes that develops when a woman becomes pregnant. And it also increases her chances for diabetes after the baby is delivered. And then you also had Hashimoto's. So you had two chronic illnesses that you were dealing with. What was your turning point where you realized you can't live this way and there has to be a solution to your health problems? And then what was the first thing you decided to try or do differently?
Yes, I was very shocked to find out that with my first pregnancy that I had gestational diabetes, and then they test you even sooner with your second one at 12 weeks. So for 6 months, I had to prick my finger 4 times a day to make sure my sugars were okay with my second pregnancy. And then 3 years later, when I was 34, I found out that I had Hashimoto's hypothyroidism. I have like a multinodular goiter on my thyroid. So I was like falling asleep when I get home from work with 2 young kids. And I'm like, what is going on? I'm too young for this. So that's when I started researching it. I already knew I could get diabetes later on, but that didn't seem as scary as all of a sudden now with the thyroid, because everything in your body runs through your thyroid. So I just started researching what could have caused my thyroid issues. And I came across like soy and gluten that they say to avoid. Your body could be missing minerals too. Like I was missing like iodine, selenium, and things like that. So I just researched everything. And a lot of it goes hand in hand with like diabetes and the thyroid. Like it's the same food that you can, that can cause it, or you can not eat to help you. So that was the first thing I did, was started researching it. Cause I was like, why do I have this? What happened? How can I live with it and try not to take medication for it if I could?
I would say most people, especially those listening that are in their 20s, is not gonna just take to researching. One, they don't have the time for it. And two, they might not even realize that what they're experiencing is abnormal. Like for this phase in our lives, we're sitting at a desk now. Like we have much longer days, we have a lot more stress. So how would someone begin this journey to even figuring out if the symptoms they're experiencing should kind of spark an alarm for them to go get their levels checked out or go get some tests run? What are some key indicators that are like, hey, it's time to go see a doctor, go see a coach, like figure out what's going on?
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of symptoms overlap for a lot of different illnesses, but mine, especially for thyroid, was I was falling asleep all the time. I was losing my hair. Weight gain could be part of it, or just not losing weight. Your metabolism slows down with what my thyroid problem was. So my doctor's the one who felt my neck and said, you might want to go get your thyroid checked out. And that's when I did. So going to the doctor and having just a baseline test done in your 20s is going to be very helpful, because you'll have your thyroid levels checked. You can check your A1C for diabetes or anything else, especially, I hate saying that when it runs in the family, it doesn't mean you're going to get it, but you know that it's there and you can still prevent it, but you have that tendency. So you just want to stay on top of it. And that way you get your baseline checked when you're younger, and then you'll know, say 10 years down the line, if your A1C starts to go up, you're like, okay, yeah, I need to, you know, look into that or do some changes. But just getting checked early on is, you know, the best thing to do.
I'm definitely a hypocrite because I don't go to the doctor, but I also know how valuable it is to get your levels test when you're feeling good. Because your levels, yes, there's a standard, like a range of normal, quote unquote, normal levels, but your body is you. Like, you are unique to everything. So knowing where you're at when you're healthy, and then when you start to feel this sense of unhealthy symptoms arise, you can go get those tested again and compare it. So I love that you brought that up. I know, like I said, I'm a hypocrite. I know I need to go do that while I'm feeling healthy and good, but it's hard. It's hard when you're adulting and you're the one that's in charge of making your own doctor's appointments now.
It is. And yeah, even now at my age, I'm like, oh, I still got to go to the doctor. Like, you still don't want to do it, but you have to, and you know you have to. And it's so much easier now than it was like 25 years ago, where you can almost get your own lab work done. My doctor wouldn't run the ones that I wanted, so I would just go and do it on my own and just get the one. So I had the whole picture of my thyroid. And yeah, the lab work too, my TSH level, the lab work says it should be between like 0.4 and like 4 point something. Mine has to be almost below like zero for me to feel good. So I had to be on the way low end of it. And most doctors are like, oh, wow, that's low. I'm like, no, it works for me. Like, I know my body. I feel worse as it goes up, even though it's still in the normal range. So yeah, just getting that early on, and you probably wouldn't even have to get tested for quite a few years unless you started feeling worse again. But just knowing that, because that's how my husband, we didn't know he had diabetes for probably like a year. And he ended up in the hospital with a saddle pulmonary embolism in his lungs. Like his heart was ready to stop pumping. And they said, how long have you been diabetic? And he goes, I'm not. So that's how we found out he had diabetes. And it was, his A1C was like 12.1 and it should be like below 6. So he had been diabetic for quite a while because we didn't really pay attention to the symptoms.
It's chronic illness sounds so scary. And I think something that's beautiful about the work that you do is you not normalize it. That's not the right term, but you make it seem like it's okay. We're going to get this figured out. You're not going to feel overwhelmed. And I'm here to help you along the way. I want to jump back to your story of you got your test done. You did your research. Was there any initial step you started to take after you kind of had a better understanding of what it is you were dealing with to start to heal your body naturally?
I just tried to work with food at first and just to remove things that I knew could be aggravating it. Obviously, diabetes, yeah, you already know, like, I lived in New Jersey, so it's like bagel capital with New York City right there. So I was eating bagels like all the time, and I could tell how they made me feel when I ate it. Like within a half an hour, I was crashing like a sugar crash. So I knew I had to stop eating like the white flours. And so just little steps like that. And then eventually I would add the vitamins and minerals I needed for my thyroid or just start replacing. I started making ketchup from scratch when my kids were little, because back then my kids are like 28 and 26. They only had one ketchup on the market. They don't have like this, you know, like you could choose from like 10 or 11 different ones now. I had to make it to take out the sugar, you know, so you had to make stuff from scratch in order to make it healthier, to remove the stuff you didn't want to eat. But now it's so much easier. You can buy a lot more products that are healthier for you. But that was what I did, was I started replacing ingredients that I knew were making my illness worse or could make it worse, and to help my kids, because I didn't want them loading up on sugar when they were like, because they put ketchup on everything, like 5 and 6. So,
yeah. And during this whole process, the process of you healing your own body and your relationship to your lifestyle, you became a coach and became a coach to help others with their chronic illnesses. So I know that you have fine-tuned your process and you help others understand what they're going through better and steps that they can begin taking to heal their body. What is some of the first few things that you help a client with when they first start working with you?
Okay, so besides the goals, because you need to know what the client, you know, their desired outcome, like where do they want to be at the end of 6 months, you know, a year, 5 years. But the first thing we really look at is what ingredients affect their chronic illness. Or if they don't have a chronic illness, but they want to prevent one, what ingredients and foods can they start to change now so that they don't get sick? And then after we look at, after they learn what ingredients they should be avoiding, I look at their food literally. We go through their pantry, we go through their refrigerator, their freezer, and I look and I teach them how to read labels. And like, this is what you need to avoid, but you can replace it with this. So it's very personalized, obviously based on people's illness, but we go through and we look at what they're eating. Cause that was my first step myself, was I looked at what I was eating. I looked at what I could change and make it not make me sicker. And then, so that's what I do with everybody. Just like, you need to know. And sometimes they don't want to like, you don't want to like see what you're eating. It's like when you don't want to step on the scale or something, you just don't want to see it. But you need to, because you need to know how to change, you know, what to remove and how to feel better.
Yeah, it's like out of sight, out of mind does not apply in this instance.
Unfortunately, no, it makes you sicker a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And when it comes to these ingredients, you had told me outside of this podcast a very interesting fact about who's actually in charge of our food. So I would love for you to share this statistic, this fact with my audience, because it's terrifying in the grand scheme of things. So I'm going to let you just drop the ball on them right now.
Okay, so all the food companies, I'll ease into it this way. there's about 12 corporations that own 80% of the food that we buy. And so they're absorbing all like the old organic little companies like Annie's used to make the organic mac and cheese and stuff, and they get bought out and different ones like that. Our food supply is mostly run by lobbyists for the food companies. And so all the food laws are voted on because the Congress people are paid by the lobbyists to vote in favor of those companies, unfortunately. And we have a lot of crossover from Monsanto is no longer in existence, but they were the lead GMO company that I learned about in grad school. And every other country in this world refused to let them grow crops in their country except for ours. Because we have a lot of their old lawyers on the USDA. Clarence Thomas is on the Supreme Court. He was a lawyer for Monsanto. The FDA, the EPA, they're all on those committees. So there's like no way around us not having kind of like tainted food. And then when you have the corporations that are buying all the companies that are trying to have healthier food, it's just harder to find healthier food. They're out there, but you have to look for it.
Well, I know Charlotte specifically has, I have not been to it and it is on my list. I need to go, but we have a giant farmer's market and it's all locally like produced food. It's all locally grown. It's all the actual farmers are selling you their food that they've grown. Is that a way to, in a sense, get around this monopoly, we're going to call it, of food?
Definitely. If you can do like that farm to table, if you can cut out the middleman, that's the best. Like grow it yourself if you can, but definitely farmers markets. I wish here in Texas, I'm in the Fort Worth area, there was more. I know in Dallas there are some, but I'm like an hour away from Dallas. Yeah, to go buy like right from the farmers. And so that is like the best thing. And then if not, just like the produce that you can find in the store, but like shop the outside of the store is where all the healthier food is, or the outside aisle of the store. But yes, farmers markets are like the best because a lot of farmers try to grow it with less chemicals and pesticides and safer.
Are pesticides part of causes for chronic illness?
Yes, it depends on who you ask, but GMOs were started here in the early 90s. So a lot of you and your listeners, like my kids, grew up on food that was already with GMOs, but people didn't know about it. Pesticides that are sprayed on, you can wash those off. That's not the issue. It's when they change the DNA of the food. And so corn had their DNA changed where they put a BT toxin, Bacillus thuringiensis, which would rupture the stomach of the bugs that ate it. So that way they wouldn't eat the crops. They say it only affects those bugs, but the rise of GI problems that we've had in this country over the last, 20 or 30 years where people have so many, gastrointestinal problems, you can't help but find that correlation to where there is some. Definitely. I mean, with kids with autism, I studied it in grad school. Parents put them on organic diets because it lessened their symptoms because of the chemicals and certain ingredients in food. So yes, pesticides do. I mean, they're poison. So I mean, like you wouldn't go drink like a can of it, but yet it's on our food or it's in our food. And it's hard to get away from it unless you're looking for it. And it can be very overwhelming. You just want to throw up your hands and be like, forget it. I'm just going to tell you what I want.
Which I think is the problem. It's part of why we're recording this episode is because there's so, you could turn any piece of information against you. And it's, people get to a point of, screw it. I'm going to die anyways. So who cares? Like we're not meant to live forever, but it's also, we're not meant to live in a mass produced world. It just was more convenient and it's to serve a greater population, but we're missing all of the actual details of quality of life and of health, and being healthy allows you to have a better quality of life for the long term. And that's the point that we're trying to get for here. Whether you have a chronic illness or not, it's know what you're putting into your body. At least have the information so that you can decide accordingly, but don't just blindly consume everything that's in front of you.
Exactly. And I think your generation, they are way more thinking about that. Like they look into that and they stand up for that more than past generations that like my generation maybe, where, you know, you just kind of like, oh, that's just what they do. But you, it's like, no, we don't need to. Like, there's a lot of people standing up for safer food. But yeah, you're not going to get away from all toxins, but you can minimize your toxic overload, because some people just have severe reaction to toxins, like mold in your house is one, you know. But I mean, in your food itself, it's just, you don't know that it's sitting in there for so many years. And then all of a sudden you're getting sick and you're like, why? And it's just from that, they toxins just build up in your system. They don't really leave it like you want it to. I mean, you can detox, but, and you have organs that detox for you, but when it's so much sitting in there, it's just going to stay.
Yeah. And it's like your body reaches a point until it pops. And that pop is your chronic illness that just all of a sudden surfaces.
Yeah. And if your body stays in that inflamed state, so inflammation, so if you're eating foods that are causing it to stay inflamed, it's like a sore that never heals. It's the inside of your body is not able to fight off other illnesses like it's meant to. So it's always, you know, just sick inside. And so you're more susceptible to getting things. So lowering your inflammatory foods will definitely help with that, because then you stay healthier and you can fight off a lot of other illnesses. I mean, there's some chronic ones that will just pop up, but like I said, you're not, just because it runs in your family doesn't mean you're going to get it, but you should be more alert and proactive for that to help prevent it. Because diabetes is preventable, type 2, you know, a lot of things are preventable if you catch it early enough and are just aware.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about the nutrition side of things. Are there any specific lifestyle changes or adaptations that can help improve the quality of life for people with chronic illnesses outside of the food aspect?
Well, probably just removing as many toxic things in our environment. Like, I mean, even our air has toxins and stuff floating in it. You know, you hear about air quality a lot, but just trying to remove as many toxic products as possible will also help, because especially skincare and lotions and things, because it only takes like what, 26 seconds for what you put on your skin to be absorbed. And it goes into your system quickly and it goes right into your system. It doesn't go through your liver, but it goes in quickly. And so a lot of things that we're touching or using that are toxic we're also absorbing. And we don't even realize that we're absorbing them, because a lot of stuff we don't even know are as toxic as they really are. Like laundry detergent, I try and get the non-toxic stuff to use. So that way you're washing your clothes with stuff that's you're not going to wear with the detergent on it. And then just being like exercise, you know, just trying to stay healthy as best as you can helps fight, like strength training and things like that. It helps build, you know, muscle mass, and it helps your heart, and it helps you, like your whole body, just stay healthier.
Are there any certain brands that you're like, do not have this in your house? Like name common household brands, whether it's skincare or hair care, or like you mentioned detergent, even like dishwashers, like or cleaning supplies? Like there's so many ingredients in everything. So let's just drop the ball on some of these name brands. What do you tell clients of like, get that out of your house now?
Well, I know like a lot of people use Tide. My own kids use Tide. I'm like, they lived with me. So they're like, I'm not listening to you. But yeah, Tide is not good. I know I walk down the aisle at the grocery store, and I mean, I try and avoid it at all costs, but I have to go get toilet paper or something. And I'm like, oh, this is the chemical aisle. Because all you do is you smell all the fake scents that they put in everything. And it's all the chemicals. So I try not to use anything that's like over the counter. I always buy like organic dishwasher pods, you know, without the plastic on it. I don't use a lot of stuff. It'd be a lot to name. If it's got a lot of ingredients in it, if it has ingredients you cannot pronounce, they're most likely chemicals. You know, I've even made my own laundry detergent with like washing soda and baking soda and Epsom salts and stuff. So, I mean, you can make your own. It's just not as convenient. And skincare too, you just have to be extra careful. There are some really good apps. Think Dirty is a really good app where you can put your product in and it will tell you on a scale number if it is like, the products I use are like a 0 or a 1. There's like nothing toxic in them. And then if it goes to a higher number, then you know that it's more toxic. So you can use Think Dirty. And then there's for food, there's also the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen from the Environmental Working Group. And it tells you like the top products that you should, or top food you should get as organic. And then the ones that you don't really need to get as organic, so you can save money too. So yeah, those are two good lists to use. But yeah, I try and avoid all those chemicals.
I know I'm definitely guilty of having a lot of chemicals around me, like even my body spray. And I tried natural deodorant and it doesn't work very well. And I use Tide Pods and I use detergent. And I know most of you guys listening also use those things. Where maybe just going forward, like as you run out of these things, be a little bit more cautious of what you buy next. So maybe next time I go to the supermarket or to wherever I go to get my Tide Pods, like I'm not going to get Tide Pods. I'm going to look for something with cleaner ingredients because I already need new things to clean my clothes with.
Right. Yeah. Like don't. Yeah. That's what a lot of people get overwhelmed. And it's like you don't have to like get rid of all your food and all your products. Just replace them when you need to replace them with better ones. I know Seventh Generation is a better brand for detergent and fabric softener than Tide. And I use that for a long time. But yeah, replace it as you need to. And then, you know, don't throw away your money. But it's also convenience. Convenient food, like prepackaged food, is like the least nutritious. And then the convenient products are also the ones that, because they're made with chemicals and like the fillers and things that are cheaper for them to manufacture, but yet they're not good for us. So yeah, anything that's more convenient is unfortunately going to be a little more toxic.
Which sucks. It shouldn't be that way. That's like really backwards.
I know. Oh, I found a dishwasher pod that's a tablet. And it's much better. Like I'm always researching and I'll see articles and I'll see people post like, oh, like, you know, these are the products I use. So then I go and look at them. I have to remember what it's called, but it's just, and it's not in plastic. It's just like a little tablet. Oh, it's Blue Land. That's what it is. I can't remember it because I just got it. And it comes in like a little tin.
I've used Blue Land for soap, for hand soap.
Yeah. So I thought I'd try that. And it washes my dishes the same. I was using Cascade, but like the plastic doesn't dissolve that they're in and it kind of clogs our pipe sometimes. So I'm like trying to get away from that too. Because plastic is also not good for us. It's a whole other, you know, rabbit hole I could go down. But yeah, so I use Blue Land and Seventh Generation more for things. But yeah, it's a lot. It's overwhelming. So start with one thing at a time. That's the best way to do it. If you're replacing an ingredient or if you're replacing like your body lotion, just, you know, go for the one that's got less toxins in it. But just do one thing at a time because that's how you form habits, too. It's like you can't change everything at once because then you're just going to give up and not do it at all because it's too overwhelming. So if you do one at a time, and you've already formed that habit, then you move to the next one. So you just do one product. And then the next time you go, you run out of something, go get something healthier. So then it's doable. And it's not so like, oh my gosh, I have to throw away everything in my house.
Yeah, that's a really valid point. I love that you mentioned that. Are there any hidden things that someone might be doing that's actually exacerbating their chronic illness symptoms and maybe they don't even realize?
Well, one of the main ones is with food, especially, they don't know what ingredients are making them their chronic illness worse. So that right there is they might be eating something they don't think is harming them because they don't know that it's harming them. So once they figure out what ingredients hurt them or help them better, then they'll be able to move forward. But yeah, it's the not knowing that really, because you don't know what you don't know, right? So it's like, if you don't know it's hurting you, you don't know to not keep doing it.
Yeah. Even if your symptoms don't show up right away.
And that's even, I don't want to say scarier, but yes, not knowing that you might have, you know, like say you these symptoms are going to show up, but you don't know it and you're still doing stuff. You don't know that what you're doing is causing could cause those symptoms later on. That's why if you have a family history of something, to always check first, you know, to make sure you have your baseline, because in that way, you know, you can work on preventing it. And a lot of times we don't know. We think we're doing everything right, and then something happens. It's like my thyroid. I'm like, I don't know how I got that, the goiter thing on my thyroid. I'm like, what did I do? You know, you just have to move forward from there.
Yeah, and that's where you come in. You help them get, like, learn more about this process and how manageable it is and how doable it is. And I want to talk about how chronic illness, I don't personally suffer with any chronic illnesses, thank goodness. I have worked with clients who have, so I know, and I have friends that have chronic illnesses of their own. So I know that it is prevalent within the young adult, young professional population. And it's hard. It can be hard to be a 20-something that has to really think about their gut health or think about extra things that none of their peers are thinking about as well. And that's tough on the brain. That's tough on your mental health. How do you help clients manage the mental health aspect of being diagnosed with a chronic illness?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's the biggest part. And no matter how old you are with a chronic illness, but especially when you are younger, because you're like, I'm too young for this, you know, this shouldn't be happening. Like the uncertainty, especially when you first get diagnosed and you're like, oh my God, my life is over. You know, you just don't know anything. So I help them look and realize like, okay, your life is not over. There are steps that, you know, we can work on. And we break it down into what is most urgent for them at that moment. You know, like, okay, so what will help relieve your stress right now first? And then we just keep following, you know, going down the list of things to help them just get their nervous system back, hopefully to a little more regulated, and get their stress levels lower. Because stress, it's true, stress kills. I mean, it does over time. And it affects your heart, and it affects, you know, everything in your body. And it just makes, if you do have a chronic illness, it'll make it worse stressing about it, but you can't help stress about it because you're like, what do I do? You know, I'm sick. I can't do anything. Yeah, I can't eat the same thing as my friends, all this stuff. So yeah, so we work on that just to help them like, okay, we'll tackle one issue at a time. And then once they realize like, oh, okay, it's like taking bite-sized steps, and that they know that they can get through that first thing. So now we can tackle the next problem and the next problem. And then they realize that, okay, it's not as bad as I thought it was. Because I know when my husband got diagnosed, he was like, and I was like, for one, you should have been eating what I was cooking. Two, let's take you shopping. And so he learned how to read labels and like the carbs, you know, and how to like eat salads again, because that was his choice. But it was like, he was just so overwhelmed, he didn't even know where to start. You tackle what is most upsetting to them at first and get them calmer, and then we can move on. And then they realize that they can like make little swaps, or it's not as big of an issue as their mind was telling them it was, you know, because you know how we always think the worst, what's going on. So, but yeah, just having someone to help them stay grounded and calm, and like just help them with their plan. Like, we're going to work through the steps and we'll get you to where you want to be.
Yeah. It's not as end of worldly as you're making it out to be. Does it suck? Yes. Yes, it does. And we'll give that to you. You can throw your 2-minute tantrum, but then it's time to pick yourself up and actually have a plan and do something about it. And that's going to be with everything. That's not just chronic illness related. So you can see there's a pattern of all the episodes I've talked about so far. And this one, even though this is a topic of chronic illness and not all of us are experiencing that, it all relates. Like, it's the habit building. It's the changing your ways. It's taking care of yourself. That's what we're focusing on. This just happens to be to help you also alleviate any chronic illness symptoms.
Exactly. Yes, most definitely. Yeah. And that's, I think when anyone is hit with any, you know, diagnosis or anything that's different, like a job loss or something that's out of the blue, it just throws them for a loop. And so once you, you know, stop and think and breathe, you're like, okay, it's not as bad as I thought. But when you're in that moment, like we've all been there, you're in that moment, you're like, forget it. I give up. But yeah, it's a process, but you know, and younger people aren't used to having to deal with that, you know, more often.
Yeah. And like I said at the start, this is becoming more and more common. I have a client who is recently diagnosed with Crohn's, and she went to her primary care physician a couple weeks ago. And for those of you listening, when you have Crohn's, you can't really eat raw vegetables. You can't eat a lot of vegetables unless they're thoroughly, thoroughly cooked. And even then there's some, and it just causes a lot of discomfort due to the fiber. And then another part of that is strenuous physical activity also doesn't help because of that additional inflammation. Her doctor literally bypassed the notation that was on her chart that said she has Crohn's, didn't listen to her when she communicated verbally, I have Crohn's disease and she's overweight. And he literally told her, go eat more veggies and you should start running. I will say, some doctors are better than others. But I can only imagine how difficult it is to go to the doctor looking for help, knowing that something's wrong with you or wanting the help that you need to move forward and just being overlooked. How can someone who's listening become a better advocate for themselves with their doctors or just within the healthcare system in general?
That bothers me a lot because my own doctor was like that with my thyroid. And it's very frustrating. That's why I would run my own lab works. And for my own benefit, just so I could see it. But yeah, I mean, functional medicine doctors today are the ones that are really taking the time to talk to patients, and they actually have studied more alternative methods and more holistic approach to illness versus just the regular MDs. So I would definitely look for a functional medicine doctor. And I know it's a little harder to find them, and a lot of times insurance might not cover it. But also, just have your questions. Write down things you want to ask your doctor and bring them with you on a piece of paper, on your phone or whatever, and just be like, no, I want to know, like, what can, you know, I read about this. And a lot of them might just be like, I'm the one with the doctor, I'm a doctor and you're not. So why are you asking me this? That's when you look for another doctor if you can, because there are really good doctors out there, even non-functional medicine doctors, but there are the few that kind of give them a bad name. But yeah, definitely just have your questions ready. Do your research. If you're working with a coach or a nutritionist or whatever reason that you're going to the doctor, they can also support you and tell you like, okay, you need to ask this. You need to ask this. You need to ask this. I'm doing that to my husband all the time when he goes to the doctor. I'm like, make sure you ask this, this, and this. Or any of my clients, when I talk to them, I'm like, make sure you like ask about this specifically. That's the worst thing, especially something with Crohn's. I just spoke to someone recently who has Crohn's, and oh my gosh, she writes down what she eats in a journal and how she feels after she eats it, because she's had it for a long time. And so she's really prepared, and like, she knows how to take control of her own illness. She gets she'll drink her veggies instead of eat them, because of what it does to her intestines. So she'll do it in like a shake instead, because she knows she needs the veggies.
That's a smart way to do that.
But yeah, so it's hard to question a doctor sometimes. Take a friend with you. Take someone who is not going to be afraid to say, well, wait a minute, what about this? Because it's sometimes easier for that third party to speak up, because they're not the patient. And they don't have anything to do with that doctor. So it's like they can say whatever. I'm like, hey, if I'm local, take me, because I'll speak up for you. But yeah, you have to just stand up for yourself. And I know that's hard for some people, but when you get shot down like that by a doctor, you learn quickly how you're like, I'm not putting up with that anymore. I would have been like, did you not see I have Crohn's disease? Hello. It's like, that's crazy.
That was pretty much her response. And I will say, as someone in their 20s, it is really intimidating to stand up to your doctor when they're telling you you're fine. And they're telling you, especially as a female, it's like, oh, it's all in your head, or it's related to your period, or it's this, or it's that. And for you to, you want to believe them. They are the expert. You are going to them for a reason. They got their degree. They went to school for this stuff. But they also don't have the time to just fully care for you. And that's where the functional practitioner comes in. That's why we push to go in that direction. You're not the first guest I've brought on in this health segment to mention that. And there is a reason that you guys are mentioning that. It's your firsthand experience of the general doctor that your insurance gives you fails you more times than not. And it's really awful to say. And we know not all doctors are bad, but most of them are not great. I'm just going to say that.
And not to keep saying bad things about them, but a lot of times it's the way their office is set up, or a lot of doctors' offices now are like owned by companies or whatever. So it's a business. And so they have to see so many patients in a day, and which is not fair to them. I'm sure they would rather spend more time with their patients, but they, you know, it's out of their control sometimes. So yeah, my sister-in-law is a functional medicine doctor. She lives in Maine, but she also has her license in Texas. And so I'm always bouncing stuff off of her like, hey, this is what I was told. What do you think? So yeah, you want to try and find one. And there's way more out there now. Or I think there's like functional nurse practitioners too that are, because a nurse practitioner is like one step below being a doctor. Like they can prescribe medicine and do that. They're just not quite at the doctor level, but they can do almost everything. So anyone in the functional field, definitely, you know, that's why I always, whenever my OBGYN was always a woman. I'm just like, I'm sorry, I can't talk to someone who's never had the same issues as me. You need someone at that, you know, that's experienced it to really understand you.
That's what I talk about with nutrition. If someone's trying to lose weight or whatever, maybe be healthier, I don't believe a female client should work with a male coach, because our hormones just change so much that a male can do as much research as he wants, as much reading, as much listening to clients as he would like. He's never going to know what it feels like to be a woman during the different phases of her menstrual cycle.
Yes. Oh yeah, that's no. And that's so true too, because even me, like I am like postmenopausal now, and more people are talking about it. I even got certified as a menopause coach too, to help other people, because I've been there. I know what it's like. And I'm like, kind of, I'm doing my own strength training, but I'm like, I could do maybe a personal trainer, but I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I need someone that's in their 50s that understand, and a woman that understands what I'm going through. I'm like, there's plenty of awesome fitness people that are your age or in their 30s or 40s, but I'm like, I still want someone who understands the menopause symptoms and this side of the hormones, you know? So it's like, and you hate being so
ageist.
I mean, I don't want to like not pick on someone or pick someone because of their age.
Yeah.
I'm not being discriminatory, but I need someone who knows me or like my age. You know what I mean? Like, and it helps you in the long run. So yeah. So being picky about who you get to be in like your team, you know, your doctors and your fitness people and everything like that. Yes. You kind of want to interview them in a way and like pick people that are going to help you, that are going to not blow off your Crohn's disease or whatever. So yeah.
Yeah. And people that get you too, that know what you're going through and that have that relatability aspect.
Definitely. Yeah.
It's like, you didn't become a coach because you didn't have any chronic illnesses. You became a coach because you had some and you worked on healing your body and now want to help other women do the same, or other people do the same.
Exactly. Yeah. It was once my husband got diagnosed that I finally was like, you know what? I really need, because I've been helping him and I've been helping other people. I'm like, I need to just make this like official. And then I did the health and life coach. And then all of a sudden I was like, I really like the nutrition. So then I went and I got 3 different certifications in nutrition just to learn the different aspects of it. Yeah. Usually it's, what do they say? Like your message is like your mission or whatever. Like that's, you've lived it and you've come out the other side. So you know what people are going through.
Yeah, exactly. The last question I have for you is what I like to ask almost every single guest. I don't think I had time on the guest episode that comes out before yours, but are there any final pieces of advice or information or just message that you want to touch on for the 20-somethings that are listening?
Okay, having kids in their 20-somethings, I know how a lot of times you don't really want to listen to older people that have been there because you want to learn it on your own. I totally get that. Take it with a grain of salt and just keep it in, you know, the back of your mind that, okay, this might be helpful someday, right? But trust your body. Trust what it's telling you. We all know our own bodies. Just like with my thyroid, I know that my TSH needs to be like way low for me to feel good. No matter what the doctors say. No, I feel better. Okay. Do your research. Go to trusted sites. There's a lot of misinformation out there, nutrition and everything. So go to trusted sites. PubMed.gov is really good for, it's where doctors actually go to research things. And there's like peer-reviewed studies and things on there. So that's that's a really good site to check out. And like with the doctor, speak up for what you want. Seek out the right people to help you. It's okay to ask for help. And I think your generation is way more comfortable asking for help. I think every generation, the next generation always gets more comfortable than the one prior of asking for help or doing new things that the prior generations are like, oh, that's taboo, you know, don't want to do. But yeah, definitely just be your own advocate. I'm all about biohacking your health, making sure that, you know, you're doing everything that is good for you and doing everything that you can to feel better. And it's not going to be the same for everybody. We're all different. So what one person does, it may not work for you, but you can do something very similar. So yeah, just speak up and trust your bodies.
Yeah, it's not a one size fits all. It's find what's going to work for you and go with that. So thank you, Cindy, for being a guest on How To 20-something.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Where can people find you if they want to get in touch or ask questions or even inquire about working with you? And then I also know that you have a free gift for my audience. So can you explain what that is as well?
You can find me. My website is just cindystickle.com. I'm on Instagram, Cindy Stickle. Yes, my free gift is 5 surprising foods that no one told you about that can help you manage your chronic illness symptoms, or, you know, if you want to prevent even. And it's 5 different simple little food swaps that you can make to help, like, especially if you're diabetic, you know, one of them is like the white flours, to start replacing them with whole wheat flour or nut flours or things like that. So it's 5 different things that you might not have been aware of to help you with your preventing, or if you do have any symptoms.
All right. And you guys already know that that information will be linked in the show notes for you to immediately access. All you have to do is click on the link that's provided there and put in your name and email, and Cindy is going to share that resource with you for free. So take her up on that. But this does conclude another episode of How To 20-something. If you liked what you heard, if you learned something new, if you have a chronic illness yourself or know someone with one, please share this episode, post on social media, send it through text messages on Apple, on Spotify, wherever you want to listen to, it's there. And I can't wait to be in your headphones again next week with another brand new episode. In fact, it'll be the 1-year anniversary episode, so stay tuned for something really special. All right, see you guys later.